posted a 5-4 opening night win over the West Michigan Whitecaps. First time South Bend has won its opener since 2015. Same two teams play again tonight at Four Winds Field. Much better weather is expected, 7:35 right here. Chicago Cubs in Milwaukee for a weekend series against the Brewers. Game time 8 Eastern tonight.
The home of Notre Dame football. 96.1 WSBT, South Bend, the sports leader. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is drip. I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Fumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Woo! Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Glad to have you with us. Five Star Dive Bar, 526 South Main Street in downtown Elkhart, along with former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. Sean Stiers coming to you on another Friday as we roll into this noon hour. The lunch crowd arriving here at Five Star. They're open for lunch every Friday at 11 a.m. What's our special today, Evan?
Fish sandwich and fries for $6.
Fish sandwich, that makes sense. So a fish sandwich and fries for just $6. Not bad at all. Tell us, of course, we're presented in part by Sharpley Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234, sharpleytraining.com. What kind of stuff is going on at Sharpley right now? Because we're in that part of the year now where baseball and track and softball are going on, but football and basketball is out of season right now.
Well, this last week, a whole lot of nothing because it was spring break.
That's true. Everyone's like down everyone, in Florida or Texas now.
I feel like everyone left. But as we kind of ramp things up, baseball, a lot of the teams we were working with, they're starting to transition into playing games. So we'll still do quite a bit of private training as far as hitting and throwing and fielding and that. But we will transition now into kind of the off season for really for football. That'll start to pick up quite a bit with some different camps that we're doing. And as far as the athletic side, we've got our speed and agility classes, we've got our strength and conditioning, and then with our adult classes, we've got a couple of early morning before work classes where a lot of businessmen, businesswomen come, and then we have a couple of kind of mid to late morning boot camps that we offer too.
I've seen a guy from Adams High School, Ira Armstead, a quarterback you've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
He's gaining some more steam. He continues to pick up offers. It sounds like he's been to some camps and stuff like that. And I mean, he's still a relatively new to the quarterback position, but he's picking up offers as he goes along.
Yeah, he's got a lot of upside. I think that's what people are seeing. They're seeing, number one, is his raw talent in passing the football, but his athletic skills too. He just got done going to an Elite 11 regional workout and was one of the top 10 testing, and that's just 40-yard dash, vertical leap. I think they do the Powerball. They do like a three cone or pro agility. So he was top 10 regardless of position. That's not top 10 quarterbacks. That was top 10 regardless of position. And then, of course, they worked out and through. So kind of balancing that. But he still only really has about a year and a half under his belt as far as being a starting quarterback. So, he's 6'5", over 200 pounds. I mean, he's got the potential. Yeah, he's got the potential to be pretty good.
Big arm, athletic, the whole thing. I've got a chance to see him the last couple of years when Mishawaka has played Adams. He's got an arm for sure.
Yeah.
So, all right. Of course, we've got the men's Final Four coming up tomorrow on WSBT, 6 o'clock, it's Auburn against Virginia, and then at 9 o'clock, Texas Tech against Michigan State. We'll have some more men's basketball talk coming up, including some conversation on Zion Williamson, with him being out of the tournament now, and the impact there. And Zion,
is anybody watching?
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's a big question, because the Michigan State game,
I
didn't think about who it was. It
ratings would have been a little higher.
Yeah,
there.
they were very high. Actually, they drew the biggest college basketball rating in 14 years since 2005. It drew a 10.5 overall rating, which means that more than 10% of the people around the country were watching. So a big audience that drew. But again, we'll get to that in a little bit. Also, some conversation. Brian Kelly, a comment from him. And we've got more Who Said It coming up.
All right.
With some Notre Dame football players. We'll play some audio, some sound bites from some Notre Dame football players.
We're like a week away from the spring game, aren't we?
We are. It is a week from tomorrow, and we'll have that here on WSBT. It's amazing. The spring's almost in the calendar this year because of Easter, and that's kind of how the whole calendar is laid out, with Easter being
later.
Right? Yeah, the spring football season has gone quicker, so they're going to be done a week from tomorrow. Typically, it's at least a week later that it finishes, if not even at the end of April, but between the NFL draft and Easter and
everything
else.
You know what, I haven't checked this year. The first couple of years after I stopped playing, there was an alumni flag football game.
Really?
That was in the stadium, and it was after the blue and gold game. And I won the MVP in year one.
I was going to ask if you played. That answers that question.
And then I came back in year two and played even better than I did in year one. And Reggie Brooks did not give me the MVP in year two. So I have not.
He gave you the Heisman, right?
I have not gone back since then.
Come on, Reggie. All the old guys are like, keep the young buck out of here. We don't need those. That young arm out.
Well, I thought it would be cool to do it at halftime, because what was happening was, and we were trying to build up a little more, a little more of a following, because what it kind of ended up being was, our families would come down on the field and watch. I mean, it was, 15-20 minute game. That's for most of the people. That was about as long as they could play before we started having some, maybe a pulled hamstring here or there, or people getting tired. So, but I thought it would be fun to do it at halftime when you actually had people in the stands watching. But we were doing it after the game, so everyone would leave,
right,
and then we go play.
Here's something interesting. I just had this conversation the other day, this week, with somebody from Notre Dame, and I didn't realize this because Notre Dame charges admission. I think it's $15 for the blue-gold football game. They've always charged admission. Apparently, a lot of other schools, maybe even the majority, I guess, don't charge admission for their spring game. But Notre Dame, when they charge that admission, but that goes to the, I think it's the scholarship fund, St. Joe County, basically.
Okay.
Notre Dame helps provide scholarships to Notre Dame for people in St. Joseph, for kids in St. Joseph County who go to St. Joseph County high schools. So they charge admission, but it goes right back, and it helps kids who want to go to Notre Dame. Yeah. So I didn't realize that other places did not charge. Apparently, a lot of them just let people
just come on in.
So that's where that money is going to go. It's going to help kids in St. Joseph County, high school kids who want to go to Notre Dame. It'll help them with some scholarship money. So that's a big part of that. And, of course, we've got the women's Final Four coming up tonight in Tampa. It's 7 o'clock on ESPN2. It is Baylor against Oregon. Baylor's the number one overall seed, and Oregon upset Mississippi State,
right,
the team, of course, Notre Dame beat in the national championship game last year. But Oregon has that player, Ionescu, who has like 20 triple doubles. I don't know what it is, or double doubles. She's a very good player, so it's going to be a good matchup there. And then, of course, you've got a couple rivals in the late game, Notre Dame against UConn.
And our own Tom Noy is down there. Is that true?
He is.
That's right.
He is down there as we speak, putting up his three-pointers down by the beach.
He's right probably liking now. That weather, huh?
That's right. He went to Chicago, and it was crazy travel for the women because they were in Chicago. Now, fortunately, they didn't have to go too far, obviously, to get to Chicago, but they were there Monday night. They had the late game Monday night playing Stanford, the 9 o'clock game, so they beat Stanford, finished
started
up.
Started slow and then smashed them.
Yeah, big second half, gets them to the victory and back to the Final Four. But then they turned around after playing Monday night. They get back to South Bend. The NCAA apparently want them to fly directly from Chicago to Tampa Monday, but instead they came home and then flew out of South Bend at around 6 o'clock Tuesday night. So that was a pretty quick turnaround.
I thought these were student athletes. Do they not go to class anymore?
I thought the same thing. Because then think about it, when you backtrack as well with all these, it's not just the Final Four where you're leaving early. It's these other two rounds as well where you're getting out of town early.
Both men's and women's when it started.
Yeah.
It started on a Thursday.
That's right.
So you got to think, if you're actually flying out, you're not flying out Thursday to go play a noon game. Monday or Tuesday.
Yep, exactly. So that's. I do
remember back to that. It was for both the men's team and the women's team when I was at Notre Dame. March was really interesting from a scholastic standpoint for them on making sure that they could make certain things up. I know a lot of times they have a tutor traveling mm-hmm. with them to try to, okay, let's...
Let's set up an on-the-road study hall. Let's at least
put a dent in this so we're not coming back and, you know, when we get done, whether we have an early exit or, you know, like the women are right now, they're in the Final Four. Once they get done, you know, then it's finals week. and you have a month's worth of things that you should have been paying attention to, but you have a nice run in the tournament.
When you were traveling with baseball, spring break was typically early March, kind of like it is now. How much homework did you get over spring break?
Not a lot. We did the Clearwater to San Antonio pretty uh-huh. much every single year. I remember that being a little more laid back.
Okay.
As far as our workload, so it wasn't a huge amount, but it was still very challenging in season because a lot of times, you know, you're playing a midweek game, so whether that's like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, normally a Tuesday, and then depending on where we were traveling to, we would leave on either a Thursday night or a Friday, so usually you'd miss your Thursday class. At least one day, sometimes two. And then it would be, you know, Friday getaway day would be Sunday.
Yeah.
We would get into Midway or, you know, into Midway or O'Hare, wherever it was. And I don't think there was a time we got back, you know, before 1 a.m. and then you have an 8 a.m. class on Monday. And it was just kind of that cyclical thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, that was, I've been on some of those trips with you guys, obviously, and there were times where I was still doing early mornings, so I had to be up even before that, so that was a lot of fun, too.
Sure, that was brutal.
Yeah, that's right. But you guys had a lot more, as you said. I mean, you guys had the classes you had to worry about, so that goes a lot deeper than that. So, again, women's Final Four tonight, Baylor and Oregon at 7, Notre Dame against UConn a little after 9 o'clock. Both of those games will be televised on ESPN2.
You've got your picks for that?
I'll save those.
Okay.
I'll save those.
All right.
But
you saving them for SportsBeat or for...
Do you have yours?
Yes.
Okay.
I've got Baylor and Notre Dame in the national championship game.
That's actually what I have. Yeah. So, I think it's going to be... It should be a slugfest between Notre Dame and UConn.
Four really good teams, yeah, though, too, here playing. So.
I think it could be... I mean, last year's Final Four... You could argue was the best Final Four for the women ever, especially because of Arike Ogunbowale, yes. Obviously, with the buzzer beaters. But I think you could see more of the same. Baylor is the number one, and they've beaten UConn earlier this year. Of course, UConn has beaten Notre Dame in the regular season.
I remember specifically talking about that early on.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't just beat them.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing.
Yeah. And now that was 4 months ago.
Right.
So how different are they now? Because UConn even, I think, is different and not in a good way compared to four months ago.
And I think we would have to go back and check the tape, me speaking and saying, you don't want to peak then. You know, your goal is to continue
peak
to
now.
Get better and peak now. You know, when you're playing, you should be playing your best basketball
yeah.
towards the end.
And I think it was definitely coming off national championship last year. Muffet McGraw, joined us earlier. We'll talk about that team schedule. So they got in, and she actually called us at 5:15 after pulling into the airport, getting ready. So we thank her for coming on with us on SportsBeat earlier this week. So we got her thoughts on a lot of different things. But that's one of the things she talked about was how coming off that national championship, it took them a while. They weren't focused the way they should have been because it was basically like, okay, these are regular season games. Let's get to the end and play
right.
in meaningful games. You know, and even though UConn is a big rival and everything, it was at home, and it just didn't sound like they were in the right mm-hmm. state of mind. And then you throw in the fact that you had Jessica Shepherd, who came in last year after transferring from Nebraska. Brianna Turner was out all year last year, two post players.
Yeah.
And so those two had never played together. And so then when this year started, it took a little bit with two bigs to kind of figure mm-hmm. out, you know, sort of how things were going to work out there on the court. So they were, you know... If losing three games is a slump, then I think you'll take right. that, right?
but here we are again, Final Four.
That's right. They're in the Final Four, and of course, Muffet went viral.
She did.
Yesterday.
That was pretty cool.
It was, and I think a lot of people, especially if you're on social media, you saw it, but it even made Around the Horn on ESPN last night. They abbreviated some of the comments. It was on a Golic and Wingo this morning here on WSBT, some of the different outlets, and the question she was asked, now this goes back to an article
And I actually asked her about this a little bit. She gave the better answer yesterday. She was a little more politically correct. But there was an article in which she said that going forward, she was only going to have a female coaching staff. She wasn't going to hire male assistants anymore. Now, she made sure and to clarify with us that even though she doesn't have a man on the bench right now, she does have a male video coordinator. There are parts of her overall staff that where there are still some males involved. And you should also say that the first 25 years of her tenure at Notre Dame, she always had a man on the staff. And there were a couple of different reasons for that. One of them had to do with recruiting because of the male head coaches in the AAU circuit and having a man help that. And she also thought that from being a woman who was leading the program for coaching women, that it was good for them essentially to see that a woman was in a leadership position with a man on the staff. So there were different elements to that. So she was asked, with all of that in mind and the article that came out, she was asked at the Final Four yesterday at the press conference about her role as a female voice in women's basketball. And we'll let you hear the whole thing. Here's what Muffet McGraw had to say.
Did you know that the Equal Rights Amendment was introduced in 1967 and it still hasn't passed? We need 38 states to agree that discrimination on the basis of sex is unconstitutional. We've had a record number of women running for office and winning, and still we have 23% of the House and 25% of the Senate. I'm getting tired of the novelty of the first American, the first female governor of this state, the first female African-American mayor of this city. When is it going to become the norm instead of the exception? How are these young women looking up and seeing someone that looks like them preparing them for the future? We don't have enough female role models. We don't have enough visible women leaders. We don't have enough women in power. Girls are socialized to know when they come out, gender roles are already set. Men run the world. Men have the power. Men make the decisions. It's always the men that is the stronger one. And when these girls are coming out, who are they looking up to tell them that that's not the way it has to be? And where better to do that than in sports? All these millions of girls that play sports across the country, they could come out every day, and we're teaching them great things about life skills, but wouldn't it be great if we could teach them to watch how women lead? This is a path for you to take to get to the point where in this country, we have 50% of women in power. We have less than 5% of women are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. So yes, when you look at men's basketball and 99% of the jobs go to men, why shouldn't 100 or 99% of the jobs in women's basketball go to women? Maybe it's because we only have 10% women athletic directors in Division I. People hire people who look like them, and that's the problem.
So that was yesterday at the Final Four press conference in Tampa, and there's obviously a lot in there. And I think one of the things that's most interesting about that is she didn't know that question was coming. And maybe she kind of had in her mind that something was going to come up about that.
Well, even if she didn't, you know.
But that's 2 minutes of unedited. That was from start to finish. Right. There are no ums, no uhs, no anything, straight through.
It's something that she's very passionate about.
Right.
By
the crescendo in her voice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think she hit the nail on the head. And I love that she took that stand. And what was really cool, too, was then seeing the outpouring of support, you know, and whether it's on Twitter and retweeting from all of her former players too, you know, just talking about how awesome she was as a leader. For her to do that was great. And I had a conversation with my wife about this, and she works at Sharpley Training,
right,
with me. And, we own that place together, and it's a unique environment that we create there because we have so many male athletes that are coming through, specifically football players, and she trains them, you know, and within like the strength, even the strength and conditioning world. You know, Muffet McGraw is talking about just, you know, major college sports in general. But for like my wife to be able to, pour into these young male athletes, most of them don't see that. You know, they could go throughout their whole high school and then college career and never have a female coach, and they're getting that at a very young age at our facility.
Right. Was it odd to them at all at first?
And I asked, you know, and Jackie brought that up, and she said it is a little bit different. And sometimes I think why they perceive her being a little more tough or mean than I am, but she doesn't take it, you know, from them, mm-hmm. but having a very strong female presence, I think presents, you know, to these male athletes, you know, what someone strong like a Muffet McGraw or like a Jackie Sharpley could bring to a coaching position.
That's interesting. And I think the people who have kind of voiced, because the original article I was talking about has been aggregated a little bit now, and there was a guy from an Oregon newspaper who sort of took to task and pointing out, well, if you replaced, you know, I'm only going to hire men with different, you know, I think he used some, I don't want to misquote him, but he used, you know, some different standards. Christian, I think, was one of them. Whatever you want to replace it with, he would say that it's discrimination. But I find it interesting that, you know, she points out the inequity in the number of men coaching in women's basketball. There are 351 Division I women's programs, and a bit under 30% the head coaches are men. And that doesn't even take into account how many assistant coaches are men. And I'm not going to claim to be an expert on the subject, but I do have kind of unique perspective. One, having done the radio for Muffet in the women's program for 8 seasons, and my sister, who actually played Division I college basketball at Kansas State University. She played in the WNBA for a little bit. She's been a women's coach for like 15, 16 years now. She's a head coach at a D1 program, but she's been on 7 different staffs, and she told me that only 2 were all female. The rest of them all had at least one man on the staff. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people taking Muffet, or some people anyway, taking Muffet to task for the original comments about saying she was only going to hire women going forward. But a Division I men's coach would never even have to make that statement that he's only going to hire men, because it's already assumed. No one's going to take him to task for, maybe if he said it out loud, he might get taken to task, but there's only one female assistant coach in all of Division I men's basketball.
And you look at the NBA too, and that's what I think Muffet is saying, is she's done with it being the novelty. Why isn't it necessarily the norm?
Right.
So I don't fault her for verbalizing that. And, you know, if you look at her staff and what she's doing, number one, there's the topic we're talking about, but also building lasting success for the program on the standards and really the type of, you know, character she's trying to build in these young ladies is going to last. If you look at who is on her staff, you know, who she is really grooming to take over the reins. And I think that, you know, for her to make that statement, I mean, that's her pride. This is her program.
Right.
You know, I don't think you should bat an eye at that. But for her to, I think, to verbalize it and say it, and for her to stand behind it, is pretty cool.
Well, and there's not just the male versus female in the women's game as far as who's going to be a coach, especially a head coach. There is also on the women who want to be coaches in women's basketball, they are hindered by stereotypes, mm-hmm. and essentially what you look like. You know, do you look feminine enough to be the local sort of face of this program? And a lot of times for this, the 10% that Muffet talked about, only 10% of females being athletic directors, for a male athletic director, a lot of times it's a lot easier just to hire a man and mm-hmm. put it up front than someone who doesn't look stereotypically exactly what you want them to look like in the community.
One of, and this is a little bit off topic, but Charmel Green, who is now at Penn State, she's an athletic director. Mm-hmm. She started at Notre Dame, and, you know, she was one of my favorite people. She's a former athlete, and I think, you know, she found a good balance, both as, you know, she was a female, but also as a former athlete, and be able to connect with male athletes too. And it wasn't just male, female, like we're talking about.
Right.
There was a lot more to that.
Something I found really interesting, again, when you talk about the comment Muffet made about people hire who they look like or who looks like them. Now, I haven't looked at who exactly are the athletic directors in the Big East Conference, but the Big East, which is all Catholic universities right now, 8 of the 10 programs, the head coaches, are men. And
this is in women's basketball.
Yeah, in women's basketball, of course, because 10 out of 10 in men's basketball are head coaches.
Yeah, okay.
But what's even more interesting, the other two that are not currently led by men are open positions. So of the ones that are actually filled right now, 100%, 8 of 8 are men, and the other two, Marquette being one of them, led by former Notre Dame administrator Bill Scholl, two open positions, but the other eight are led by men.
Wow.
Now, it's not quite as lopsided across the board. It was just one that I looked at. I looked at the Power Five, and 21 of 65 positions, which is about 32%, are led by men, and that kind of goes across the board. Again, head coaches only that you're talking about, roughly 30%. So, you applaud her because if you want to see change, you have to be willing to step out there and be the advocate for change.
Correct.
And she was on the biggest stage that you could be on at the Final Four as the head coach of the defending national champions and also a high-profile university, and she made a pretty big statement for change yesterday.
It was great. I mean, that's what leaders do. They lead, and she made that statement, and I think it was pretty special to see.
Yep, I completely agree. Okay, so again, it's 25 after right now, so what we'll do, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, you'll hear from Fighting Irish football coach Brian Kelly, and we're going to talk about the linebacker position because that continues to be probably the biggest question Notre Dame has this spring. How are they going to replace Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil? And also a little more, who said it? Some sound bites from four Notre Dame football players, and Evan's going to have to try to guess who they are. We're live at Five Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart in the former State Theater. Sean and Sharpley and the Leprechaun Lunch on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Back live at Five Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart, 526 South Main Street. Lunch continues. One of our sponsors, of course, Evan, is Reliable Roofing.
It is. Yeah, they do both commercial and residential roofing. They have a 50-year warranty on shingled roofs, and all the roofers are trained and certified to the highest standards. And I can vouch for that because they've done some work on my house.
Absolutely right. Okay, so Reliable Roofing, we thank them. And, of course, Beef O'Brady's of Granger as well, five-star dive bar. And all of our sponsors. I think we are here for another 2 weeks before we jaunt on back out to the west side to Four Winds Casino.
We do go back there, huh?
Yep, we do. We do. One more time before the spring wraps up. But again, as you said, spring football, Blue Gold game is a week from tomorrow.
It's crazy.
Amazing to believe, but we will have it right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We have had more full access than we have ever had as far as practices go at Notre Dame this spring. We had a full practice viewing yesterday, as a matter of fact. My days are just all blurred together, and we have another one coming up tomorrow, so we'll get to continue to see that. But it continues to be an ever-revolving door at linebacker at spring practices. The coaching staff tries to replace Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil, who accounted for 209 tackles last year.
I think we ballparked it last week, and that's higher than what we had said.
It's even more than what we thought. That's right. So here is how Brian Kelly summed up the situation with his linebackers at practice last week.
You know, like I said, I mean, there's a group of guys that we have to continue to work on. Clark's, working overtime. We're at the fundamentals of linebacker play. Good base, strike, tackling. Today, we didn't tackle very well with our young players. We're in good position, but we're not there yet. You know, this is going to be a process of continue to be patient, continue to work with them, be positive with them, and continue to do, as you can see, what I've asked Chip to do offensively is much more inside-out run game, really challenge our defense on the perimeter. We're playing a lot more press coverage. So we're trying to service each other in what we're doing in the spring. So, we're going to keep rolling up our sleeves and going to work every single day with kids that we feel like have the ability but have a skill set that needs to continue to be sharpened.
So at yesterday's practice, Asmer Bilal was at the Mike linebacker, Jordan Jen Markeith at the Buck, and then Paul Mawala, the former Penn safety, was at the Rover position. And we've seen Mawala there a couple of different times, and he actually looked like he had already made some strides there at Rover. I like that move. Yeah, and I mean, it's along the lines of moving Drew Tranquil up there a couple of years ago, because you have a guy who wasn't maybe quite as rangy as you needed to be as far as coverage as a safety, but when you move him up next to the line of scrimmage, it changes things.
Yeah, I like that move a lot. I mean, you know, I was able to watch Paul play in high school, you know, trained with him a little bit and some of his Penn teammates. I like his skill set. I think Rover's a great switch for him, you know. And Notre Dame's been doing that. We've mentioned it as far as the recruiting side is getting guys that maybe don't necessarily have to just play safety or just play linebacker or just play the Rover position. You know, they could even put their hand down and be a rush end. So it gives you a lot more versatility in situations like this where you lose two guys with a lot of experience, a lot of tackles, a lot of production, and now you're kind of, you know, I guess makeshifting at least in the short term on getting some guys some reps at different spots.
Does it concern you at all?
I'm at DEFCON 7 right now.
You're at 7, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Just because you would have liked to see somebody maybe step up more?
Let me ask you this,
okay,
Sean. You asked me a week ago. We were sitting in the same spot, and it had to do with the quarterback position.
Right.
And, you know, once the writing was kind of on the wall with Brandon Winbush leaving and knowing that this next season was going to be a guy with a lot of experience and then Phil Dracovic, who had none, could you have gotten him some more experience by not having him just focus on the scout team? So now we're in this same situation. The number of snaps, the number of tackles between Coney and Tranquil dwarfed anybody else's experience. So let me ask you that same question. Do you think there was an opportunity to get more guys on the field at the linebacker position, specifically the Buck and the Mike, where we're not necessarily as panicked about this right now?
Well, I'm trying to think of, I mean, the Pittsburgh game was a lot closer than they wanted it to be. The Ball State game, it sounds like Ball State, they were kind of planning on that game being a lot more lopsided than what it was. I think they thought they were going to be able to get some guys in those situations.
That's just like, you don't talk about a no-hitter when someone has a no-hitter.
That's right.
You
can't talk about it in advance. You've got to let it happen. And it just didn't. Even the Vanderbilt game maybe should have been a little bit more lopsided. So there were games that, had they gone a different way, they weren't as close as they were, they would have got them in there a little bit more. I remember Bauer got in at the end of the Wake Forest game that ended up being fairly lopsided. But again, you had to make sure getting into the fourth quarter that it was going to be as lopsided as you wanted it to be, and that a mistake or two wasn't going to let somebody back into the game.
Let me ask you, then why is the defensive line able to do it? Why do they have a rotation that's 6 to 8 deep?
Well, I think that those guys are a lot closer in their skill level than, I mean, Tavon Coney. It was basically Tavon Coney, Drew Tranquil, and everybody else last year. And we've kind of talked about this on SportsBeat, where the recruiting cycle just didn't necessarily pan out with some of these guys the way they thought it would. I mean, because just look at it. Drew Tranquil had to move from safety to Rover and then to Buck linebacker. So you had a guy who ended up being, since Manti Te'o, one of the best linebackers that you've had at Notre Dame, but you weren't even planning on him necessarily being a linebacker. So, and that's, you know, again, now you're moving Paul Mawala up there. I think even in a perfect world, you'd move Alohi Gilman up to Rover. But I don't think that Derek Allen or Mawala or, you know, those guys are ready to be safety right now, because you could do a heck of a lot with Alohi Gilman the way he sniffs the ball.
That'd be fun.
I know. But that's just kind of where they are right now.
I mean,
but I agree with the concept of what you're saying. You would, in a perfect world, you would have got more guys.
You know,
in there.
I did a lot of homework when this new defensive staff came and what they did at Wake Forest and a little bit at Bowling Green too. And you know, I don't think anything is off limits on what they may try. You know, they've done a couple of times. You know, Clark Lee and his linebacker group at Wake, they went with a couple of undersized guys. So could that be an Alohi Gilman or a Paul Mawala who maybe end up playing inside a little bit more, but you give up some size, you have some speed and athleticism, but ultimately, you know, you want to get your three best guys on the field there.
Right.
regardless of do they fit the bill of what a Mike linebacker should be or what a Buck linebacker should be.
And I thought that maybe Jordan Genmark Heath, because again, there's another safety moved up to the linebacker position. He got there at the end of the spring last year, and I thought maybe he'd be a little bit farther ahead than he is right now, but again, it's a different skill set. You're asking him to do some different things. He's a really good athlete, but it's a lot to ask to mold right away. I'm not at DEF CON, what did you say, 7?
I said 7, which was probably, I mean, we're a long ways away. We are. But I think there's right to be worrisome when, you know, you're hearing the coaching staff say, we're talking about just the fundamentals. We got to get better at playing linebacker, base, and tackling, and, you know, that those aren't necessarily great things to hear.
But, well, that's true, because at least, I was going to say, at least 2 years ago when Mike Elko and Clark Lee came in, guys who were linebackers pretty much knew how to play line. You didn't have to get a lot of those little things. Now, there were details about their system that they wanted to get down, but part of this, I mean, a big part of it has been by design, moving guys in, see what they can do as much as possible, and also kind of mixing and matching, just like putting Mawala in there with the first group with Bilal and Genmark Heath, kind of just to see how they work together and things like that. What, now you're more the offensive side of the ball, but what can be done in the summer that these guys can do beyond just typical conditioning things?
Well, I mean, you're able to, they have practices now. I mean, the NCAA cleared, you can have a little more hands-on. So that's going to be important as far as the development. I mean, if you look at really what Clark Lee has done, he's taken an approach that's very tactical. He's very much a teacher. I think that is important, and I'm not trying to undersell the importance of the fundamentals and base and tackling and those things. But it is a red flag a little bit. So, you know, those things need to get rectified. If you can start with and create a good foundation and a good base, I think that's going to allow them to play free and fast within the system once we get to the fall. So, is it worrisome now? Yes. If you look at really the entire defense, I think there's some confidence with some guys right now in the secondary and filling some holes with Julian Love. Troy Pride is having a good spring. You look at the defensive line, Mike Elston continues to impress and really being able to plug and play some guys and build some rotation and some depth. So I think on the defensive side, that's the glaring one. You know, offensively, there's a couple of pieces gone. Building some chemistry on the offensive line is going to be important. Some guys at the receiver and skill position stepping up. So I have one other question, which I don't think we've really addressed yet as far as spring football is concerned. That's a little bit, if we're talking concerns here, linebacker position, special teams. You're losing both Newsom and Yoon, who's the all-time leading points scorer for Notre Dame in his career.
Newsom, the bench press punter record holder.
And wearer of a great mullet, too.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've got two guys that were multi-year starters. Has there been much, and what have you seen so far this spring in that regard?
Well, I'll tell you what, the most special teams that we've seen, and we saw some more yesterday, they opened practice by having Jonathan Doerr, who did some of the kickoff duties last year, starting off kicking some field goals. They started in short and worked their way back. I think the 30-yard line was the last distance. And I don't have my notes. I believe he was 7 of 9, but he missed, I want to say, one from the 20-yard line on the left hash and another one from the 30-yard line close to the middle of the field. He's been a little erratic, even from the short ranges. And so that, to me, is a concern. We haven't seen as much of the punting stuff because the lower roof inside the Loftus, you obviously can't do a whole lot. They did have at least one or two sessions where they did that, but it's just so hard. They've only been outside one time. Well, there wasn't a ton of special teams attention there. They did a lot more 11-on-11 type stuff with offense and defense. But the place kicking right now, to me, is a concern, especially when you have someone who was so consistent like Justin Yoon. So it's a good concern. And again, there's a lot of time between now and then, but they're going to need to find some answers between now and then.
It's
as well.
Closer than we think.
Because if you're in close games like you were last year, those 3 points and even 1 point are going to matter a lot. Okay, quick round of Who Said It. Some cuts from Notre Dame football players this spring. We got to talk to a bunch of players last week. We'll play the cut from the player. Okay. Evan has to guess, see if he can guess Who is? You were perfect last week, right?
I was.
4 for 4. So let's see.
Probably going to try to stump me this week.
I ratcheted it up just a little. There could be a stump or two in here. Okay, so here's number one.
I have talked to Julian, you know, and he told me he's excited for me. And just have fun out there, show my personality. And, you know, we're both are two guys from the Chicagoland area. And I go way back with Julian, so, you know, just keep on competing, have fun, and just do what you do.
All right, so do you have a guess?
Houston Griffith.
Yeah. All right. So now you're 5 for 5 over the last 2 weeks.
But that was a tough one because he was from that area, but then went and played at IMG.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Very good point. And, of course, the question was, has he talked to Julian Love about the boundary cornerback position? Julian Love played it last year, and that's where Houston Griffith is this year, opposite Troy Pride. And he's looked really good. Another guy with a position switch because he was originally thought more of a safety, played some nickel last year, and now he's at the cornerback
position. I like him at the cornerback position.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at him out of the pads as well, it makes a lot of sense. He's got he's got long limbs. There's a lot of athleticism
there. He's listed
there.
6 feet tall. I mean, so he's got some good levers, you know. We're seeing more of the guys 6 feet and taller playing cornerback position to compete with some of the taller, you know, longer receivers.
Yep. Okay, so you got the first one, right. Houston Griffith, the cornerback. Here's cut number two.
Definitely there's a spot where selfishness would kick in and you kind of would feel sorry for yourself. But if you're going to be a good brother for your teammates, you would have to, you know, put all that aside and just support them no matter what. I mean, obviously there's times where you feel down, you feel like you want to just sit out of practice, you want to just sit out of bliss. But at the same time, like if I love this team so much that I got to put all that aside, put my selfish things aside and just go forward and support them 100%.
All right, this might be the toughest one that we've had so far.
There's nothing that really leads to...
Injury is the only thing really that you got. He missed all but 2 games last year with injury.
Defense. I'm not going to get this one. I don't know.
Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa.
Oh, okay.
And I had asked him
you
about...
You also wanted me to try to say his name, right?
Yeah, that's right. How much of a tongue twister can it be? And, of course, he broke his foot in the Michigan game, and then he came back and was able to play a little bit in the Cotton Bowl in the college football playoff semifinal against Clemson, and now he's in there with Jason Adamoloa, another one that's not necessarily easy to say, but in there for the departed Jerry Tillery in another... Okay. Big position, and both of those guys have looked pretty good so far. And again, you talk about depth, and you've got two big bodies right there.
I really like both those guys on tape as high school players, and it's translated fairly quickly. You talk about Tagovailoa even last year. Obviously, he got hurt, but you know I was pretty surprised to see him in there as early as he was. And both Adamoloa brothers, I really like their skill set. So I think that you know having two guys like that. You know, ultimately, it's going to be you got some big shoes to fill.
Yep.
But you know, to have a rotation, have a couple of guys in there is going to be important.
Yep. Okay. So here is cut number three.
I'm very comfortable. You know, the first year playing college football, you're always going to have your bumps and bruises, and you're always going to have corrections you can make. And you know, just looking back last year, the game's just moving so much more slower. And I got a groove for the game now, and I just feel I can see everything now. You know, last year, you know, coming from running back from receiver to running back, at receiver you're focusing on beating the corner, you're beating the safeties, but now it's 11 guys when you get the ball, try to scream and come get you. So just being able to see the field clear and knowing to make my cuts, it's tenfold for sure.
I think
that,
you got
is that
this
your
one.
Far Armstrong?
That is your far Armstrong. Ding, ding, ding. All right, so you're 2 out of 3 so far. The Bishop Meege from Kansas City product. He was a receiver coming out of high school, played with Colin Grunhard at BH.
Well, we had his pops, who's a coach there, on the pregame show, and he goes, man, we must have really messed up because we never played him at running back.
And it's worked out pretty well as he transitioned. And now going into year two, said he feels a lot more comfortable and just a lot more going on for him.
I mean, that happens. You know, sometimes you're just swimming in year one. You know, what you did in high school, you're not able to do consistently because you got a lot of other great talent around you. But really, between, you know, going from as a freshman, you know, from freshman to sophomore year, just the speed of the game does slow down so much of what you're able to dissect, which, you know, then helps your performance quite a bit.
Yep. All right. So Jafar Armstrong, they converted receiver to running back, was cut number 3, and here is our final cut of the day.
This spring, the biggest thing I need to improve on is bailing my left leg and pass pro. That's probably the biggest thing. And then just attacking in the run game. You know, getting up to the second level, attacking them, and just knocking them back. You know, pass pro, I just need to be conscious of it. You know, I just need to take my sets, and then when I get to that point, I just need to keep my left leg strong. That's the biggest thing. And I see it on film, and then I'm trying to work it in drills, trying to work it live, and slowly getting there. I'm excited for where I'll be in the fall.
I don't know. It's like a flip of the coin, probably.
Do you know what position it is anyway, or at least what position group it is?
It's an offensive lineman.
Correct.
Is it Eichenberg?
It is Eichenberg? Liam Eichenberg. Right. Talking about the leg, and I wouldn't have thought about necessarily the left leg being strong, but with the drop off the left side of the line, that makes sense.
That'd be his kick foot, and then that's his plant foot too.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So you're 4 for 4 last week, and 3 for 4 this week.
All right.
7 out of 8. That's not bad.
Not bad.
That's better than 45%.
Let's keep it going.
All right. Keep on chucking.
He's a chucker.
That's right. We are at 5-Star Dive Bar with Evan Sharpley, Sean Stiers, Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. We need to get this break in and then back to wrap things up. We got a little Zion Williamson talk before we finish on the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch, 5-Star Dive Bar. Be sure and come out any day, 11 o'clock for lunch. The special again today is the fish sandwich and fries for $6.
Yeah.
Not a bad deal at all. And also thanks, of course, to Reliable Roofing by Beef O'Brady's of Granger. There is also live music here at 5-Star
zero.
Every Friday and Saturday.
Tonight.
Zero. I have never seen
PM.
Zero.
And
I've
then
seen
ADHD
pictures.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
They're playing.
All right. Good stuff. Okay. We'll go semi-rapid fire here. We've got a little bit more than 4 minutes to go here. So should Zion Williamson be the number one pick in the NBA draft regardless of the team that gets that pick?
I think it's just going to be tough to pass on him. You know, it's each team, it depends on what their needs are. But I'll tell you what, it's if you pass on him and somebody else takes him,
you're going to look really foolish.
Yes.
Especially when you're talking about star power, because if you're a bad franchise, let's face it,
people in the stands.
That's exactly it. You still need to sell tickets.
So
you still need people watching.
I'm going to say yes.
I think so, too. I don't think it matters what system he happens to be going to. You've got to take. And, I mean, if you're New York or Chicago, two teams that are right in that conversation right now, why would you pass up Zion Williamson?
You don't. No, there's no chance.
That's exactly right. Who are the players you would not ever trade for Zion Williamson? Now, I'm talking about current NBA players. Bill Simmons, who does his own podcast, of course. He used to be on ESPN.
Right.
He's with his own site, The Ringer, now. He made a list of 6 players. Do you want to see if you can guess from his 6, or do you want to just give me
I'll give you mine.
Okay.
That? Giannis.
Okay.
Harden.
Okay.
Steph.
Okay.
Durant.
Durant, okay.
My favorite player right now, Luka.
Okay.
Westbrook. Kyrie, and I put Anthony Davis down, too.
Kyrie, that's interesting. And AD.
I like him. I mean...
You got 4 of Bill Simmons' 6. Giannis, the Greek Freak, Steph Curry, James Harden, Luka Doncic were 4 of his 6. Nikola Jokic of Denver, who, of course, has them in really good shape. And Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
And to me, Jokic and Embiid, I haven't seen as much of Jokic. Embiid, I don't think that's the guy who would be.
He is. I mean, he's 27-13 this year.
He is. But I would put Durant in there ahead of him. I wouldn't put Kyrie
on the list.
Westbrook is somebody I thought of, but then again, it's like, okay, can he win a championship?
Well, I don't know that.
You put him with Westbrook.
The reason why I looked at, I have Kyrie and Westbrook there, I think both those guys can create and take over a game. I don't know. I mean, obviously Zion is a freak and super athletic.
Right.
On a nightly basis, we know that those two guys right there can create and score whenever they want.
Absolutely. Okay, I agree with that. Shoe guru Sonny Vaquero says Zion will bring the biggest shoe bidding war ever. Scale of 1 to 10. How confident are you he will be wearing Nikes next year?
10. 100%.
I am too. I mean, I...
They are not going to mess this one up after what happened earlier this year.
And I think that the reason he is at Duke is because of Nike. Yeah, whether they actually gave him money or not, I think there was a backside deal that said, you go play for Duke, you wear these Nikes, when you come to the NBA, you're going to get a lot of money from us.
I'm with you. 100% Nike.
I think that's exactly how we ended up there.
And I won't buy them. I'm still wearing the Kobe's.
You're still going to wear the Kobe's.
Kobe 4s are my favorite shoe of all time.
All right. Would Kobe, if he were in his prime, would he have been on your no-trade list?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
Just making sure. All right. So John Calipari got a lifetime contract from Kentucky for not going to UCLA. Is there anyone you would give a lifetime contract
to? Right now? I would have to say Coach K. I mean, he'd have to be on that list. Really, three guys down. Two of them, I mean, they're getting towards the end of their coaching career, possibly. Izzo would be the other one, Michigan State. And I actually have Beilein down at Michigan.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, I love what he's doing.
I mean, look what they've done since he's been there.
So those are the three guys that I would toss in that list.
Can't argue with that. All right, we've got less than 20 seconds here, so we've got to wrap things up. We've got a lot more college basketball stuff we're going to get to next week that we didn't get a chance to get to today. And, of course, always football will be a day away from the Blue Gold game next week. For Evan Sharpley, Bob Henning, Garrett Kayser in the studio, Sean Steyer's WSBT South Bend.